We will reconvene the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. Welcome, everyone. It's been a while since we've all gathered together here. Our agenda this afternoon is just a couple of items, our interim work plan, implementation of 2067 in preparation for February session, and then a presentation for the Department of Revenue. So, Paul, I'm going to turn it over to Paul, who has only a half hour instead of an hour, thanks to our earlier schedule. So go ahead and run through the work plan, Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I forget, the first thing I wanted to remind you is that we do have a committee meeting scheduled for September 30th from 8 to 12. So we'll be working on an agenda for that for our next meeting. But I had emailed out to you 2 days ago, I think, a draft work plan for discussion purposes. And I think a lot of it really follows the discussion you had this morning. Those issues really, I think, came out very clearly. But as I say, this is a draft put together based on discussions with both revenue chairs. There are a number of things that appear on both the House and Senate work plans, and I've put asterisks by those, so that's clear. I've also made a distinction between those things that, and this is just kind of my judgment, which is sometimes faulty, but on what
Never.
Would be potential February issues versus what are more likely to be 2011. The first issue there is on the permanent revenue source for the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. And really, that builds on the work was done that a number of you did on the Revenue Restructuring Task Force. You had resolutions that were introduced in the regular session, so that would be a starting point, but that would be something that could potentially be ready, that proposal or a modification of that proposal or something else for the February session.
And that is, for the record, that is the plan.
So, and you saw in the earlier discussion this morning about kind of where we are in the reserve fund, where our reserve fund position is, particularly given the decrease in the forecast today and the kind of the mechanism around the trigger. It looks like the rainy day fund ending balance is very likely to be zero at the end of the 2009-11 biennium. And given the projections we had for the ending balance going into 11-13 would probably be very small, even at the end of 11-13 under current law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morse.
Thank you. With respect to the rainy day fund, wouldn't that logically be a pre-session filing in order to get, because we're so time limited?
I'm not sure. I'm going to have to discuss this with our leadership. Each of us has two bills, as I understand it, on the Senate side going through this. And then we also have committee bills, but we haven't gotten that to that level of detail. Go ahead and summarize this. The bill request deadline is November 13th. So something will be decided by November 13th.
Madam Chair, that was the information we had, that the bill draft request deadline would be November 13th, so you'd have up to that period of time to kind of develop what the concepts are.
Correct.
And to get into the content of whatever that measure might be, is it possible that our next meeting that we could have kind of the menu of alternatives that have, you know, there have been a lot of things floated out over the last several sessions to look at and to actually begin some serious discussions?
Our next meeting is October 1st, right?
Madam Chair, September 30th.
September 30th in the House. Okay. So, yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion. We can start the conversation then. And then our second, then we don't meet again till November what?
Our next meeting would be November 19th, which is when
past the deadline. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
That's also when the next revenue forecast comes out. But remember, this is a bill draft request deadline. So, I mean, you do have a proposal on the table right now. So that could always serve as a starting point.
Well, I think, you know, we went through a lot of drafts before we ever introduced the SGRs that we introduced, and I would like to go into February with something that shows some more deliberation and some more consideration than, you know, just a shell, I think. So I would like to second my vice chair and put that on our agenda on our next meeting. Okay.
Okay, the next issue is one that's also in the House work plan, and that is kind of the you've set a course with House Bill 2067, where you have, and you heard some of this from Tim McCabe today about the Betsy manufacturing credit, that, you know, have a number of bills that will be sunsetting on January 1st, 2012, a number of credits. So you'll need to set up a process to systematically look at those and make some determinations as to what kind of, you know, what kind of things you're going to be looking at, what kind of things, what kind of information you're going to need from the agencies, and also how that'll be coordinated with the House committee. So that, I think that will be something that will be under 2067. It's going to be a regular piece of the committee's activity from here on out.
Keep us off the streets.
That's right. So that's, and it may be, and now it may be that you want to have some further discussion, or it may be that you want to have some modification to 2067 or some additional bill that would make some clarification on what you do and what process you have, or it may be that there's nothing statutory. The third piece I had, you'll have a follow-up discussion actually on this at 2 today, and that's on income tax compliance efforts. You recall the amnesty program will run from October 1 to November 19th, so you should have some information for that in February. And you did have a number of bills that were approved. The department will be beginning to implement those, Department of Revenue as well as other agencies. And so that would be something we would anticipate, the possibility of some legislative follow-up in February. Over on the other side, the other page there, I just put a category of technical issues and corrections. And you recall last time, I think we had one on the TRICARE credit, for example, that was part of your agenda. What we're going to do is develop a list for you on things that have come up. We know, for example, there's an issue around the transportation package that's just a technical modification on the distribution, and we would expect that to probably start in the House but come over here. And as I mentioned this morning, too, it could well be that you have some federal legislation that you'll want to react to. It could be technical in nature, or of course, as you know, sometimes federal actions turn out to be big policy decisions too.
Yeah, we.
So, been there. But we don't really know what they. We don't see anything big happening between now and February at the federal level in terms of something passing. But you know, that's of course could happen. So those are the kind of things that we have flushed out in our discussions. So, you know, again, this is a draft and other things that may come up. The second part of the work plan really looks at things that we would see you spending some time on before February, and maybe if there's time in February, but really spending time between February of 10 and then the 2011 session. And one of the things that the interim committee spent time on last interim, and also had a couple hearings in the regular session, is the potential modifications to Measure 50. You've had some discussion, and there was some pretty specific work that had been done by Multnomah County, especially looking at the degree of variations you have in the ratio of assessed value to market value. And what are the equity implications of that? How widespread is that phenomenon? So we've had some preliminary discussions with Multnomah County, with the Association of Oregon Counties, with the Assessors Association, some of the individual assessors that have been looking at this to some extent. I know in Deschutes County they've looked at this phenomenon. So what we want to do is try to get some a team together that can provide the best information for you to evaluate the extent that problem exists and what kinds of characteristics there are, and then to kind of form a platform for you to begin to talk about potential solutions to that. And, of course, when we're talking Measure 50, we're primarily talking about constitutional amendments.
No, we are exclusively talking about constitutional amendment, unfortunately.
Okay. So we hope to, you know, we've thought about this and had some, you know, some good information. You know, the governor's task force on the timber dependent counties looked at this as well. So we want to try to put that together and give you something systematic and a good platform to make some decisions off of. Also, of course, Department of Revenue worked closely with us too and try to develop that information. The second 2011 issue is one that was also on your work plan during the session, was the local revenue diversification, which is the an issue that has been around since Measure 50 really came in. Are there ways in which local governments can reduce their reliance on property taxes, create a more diversified, more balanced revenue system in a systematic way, and what kind of options are there, and what are the implications of some of those options in terms of regional growth, in terms of how it might affect the distribution of services around the state. The last thing I put on there was at the direction of Madam Chair on the video lottery retailer commissions. And the Lottery Commission has just gone through the decision process on the proportion of the earnings that are shared with video lottery retailers. The commission has a great deal of authority in making those decisions, but of course the legislature can weigh in on that. And we have had a variety of information from different sources on what would be an efficient level for those for that revenue sharing proportions. We spent some time on it several years ago trying to look at that, at least theoretically, what would make the most sense, and kind of look at a structure so we can kind of bring that out again, and then we can also have some good discussions with the Lottery Commission and some other background information, exactly what, you know, what kind of rationale is there to the decisions that are being looked at.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosenbaum.
So what is the timing, Paul, on when those contracts are up for renewal?
This is why I need Mazin.
Calling Chair of Vice. Calling
no, well, next door they're discussing OLCC.
Oh, they're talking about.
So he's doing he's a Vice discussion. On.
I just
otherwise.
Was curious because we don't want to be taking this up after they've already renewed the contract.
I knew the answer to this, I think, a week and a half ago, but I think it's a process that they are just now starting.
I see.
And it'll be several months, I believe, before they finalize those contracts. But we will get to the bottom of it.
And one thing we could do as well is ask the director to come and maybe kind of give you a brief discussion of kind of where they're at the September 30 meeting.
Right. Any other questions, comments? Senator Morris, you look like you're deep in thought.
Well, thank you for giving me credit.
Okay. Paul, you broke all records of getting through this.
Well, I think most of these that you are things that you worked on, either actually even in last interim, but a number of them in the session, and they're kind of ongoing issues I know that you've had it, all the committee members have had an interest in. So I guess the other issue would be, is this, are there other things that the committee may want to include on that list?
Especially for the period between the supplemental session and the 2011 regular session. I think, you know, I want to make sure that we understand, I think we do, the import of what we did when we passed House Bill 2067. I mean, this really is in the category of substantial tax reform, and this is going to be an ongoing effort. Just to refresh people's memories, we have all the every single tax credit, with the exception of a couple that could not be done for various reasons. I think there's 50 tax credits, correct, Paul? 50 or 51 tax credits that are now all on a sunset schedule, and the schedule is roughly by subject area. So this, you'll hear a lot of talk about the Betsy's in connection with this bill, but it's not just about the Betsy program, which actually already had a sunset. It's about looking at all of our tax credits comprehensively and making sure that we are getting what we thought we were getting out of the tax credits. And some of them, you know, we fully expect to have some of them not cut the mustard anymore, because some of these tax credits, and we found out personally on this committee what it's like trying to take any money away from anyone once you've granted a tax credit. So the House Bill 2067 puts the legislature clearly back in the driver's seat in terms of evaluating the value of these tax credits. So expect to have that be a big part of our workload.
One other thing I might add, too, kind of came up this morning. Senator Hass had raised the issue about the transferability of credits. This came up in terms, of course, the Betsy, but also in terms of the film and video credit, and how do you make those credits viable in serving their purpose in a net income tax system when a lot of businesses don't have any net income.
Right.
So that's part of the House Revenue Work Plan, to look at some alternatives to doing that. You know, one of them is to make credits refundable, so that you have credits that go to for specific activities, regardless of what the liability is, much as we've done for the earned income credit, for example.
And I'm very interested in that notion, because one of the challenges we have with the transferability of tax credits is it's hard to hold the beneficiary of the tax credit accountable when the tax credit has been transferred. So if you had some kind of a, you know, cut out the middleman, as it were, then you could have more accountability.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in doing that, making it refundable versus transferable, we would want to do it in a very short period of time, meaning, you know, all in 1 year, because they're going to use that for financing the project, since they can't transfer the credit and get the cash up front. So so I think it'll be important on how that's refundable as a refundable credit.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely correct, Senator. And, of course, what we've thought about it is that the drawback from the fiscal standpoint would be the revenue impact would occur more quickly. And under the way that it's set up now, it's spread out over a longer period of time.
But it's still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't affect the size of it. It just would affect the timing.
Well, that's the whole value of evaluating these tax credits, is we can really focus the right amount of money to what we really want to accomplish. And if we don't have enough money, then we start cutting out to some of the lower priority things, just like the Ways and Means process. Mm.
And it's a great way to fill up a hearing room.
It's what it is. We know what it's like to try to take away free money.
Are you anticipating, Madam Chair, that continuing Betsy discussions will be folded into that tax credit sunset review, or should we make that a freestanding agenda?
Both. It will be part of the question was whether the Betsy discussion will be a freestanding discussion or will be done in the context of House Bill 2067. And I think the way it looks is both, because when we get into February, we're already looking at a fairly substantial hole And so the Betsy discussion will be on the table simply because of the revenue impact. And but it'll also be part of the larger discussion.
Senator, I do have it as one of the main House issues for February as a standalone issue in addition to the 2067 review. And my thing on that is because it's likely, you know, if you develop something similar to 2472 or a modification of that, it would have to originate in the House. So you could well see something coming over. And, of course, the as you remember from February of 08, you don't have a lot of time. So we'll try to get information that and things the House is working on to you as quickly as we can so that because you'll have to be making decisions on that fairly quickly. You don't have a couple of weeks of hearings normally. If I can add one other thing about for the meeting on September 30th, my thinking was that we would try to develop an outline and a time frame for you on the Measure 50 project. And so you would have a sense for that. We would bring that to you on September 30th and work with the other players who are going to participate in this, so you'll kind of have a better idea of you know what's what kind of output we're expecting and what kind of timeline, so that you can think about having when you'll have that information and start to develop some potential legislation.
Number of those players are here in the room. Get ready, folks. This should be an interesting discussion. Is that it for you, Paul?
That's it.
Any other questions from the committee? Is there anybody in the audience who wanted to say anything about this since we have a couple minutes? Come on up, Kathy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kathy Eaton, Governance Coordinator for the
League of Women Voters.
I just have a couple of questions. I think that what you've outlined is very credible. Certainly, we need to measure. We looked at Measure 50. We had lots of discussion of that in the Task Force on Revenue Restructuring and the problem with cities and counties and their ability to raise revenue without raising property taxes, and also looking certainly at doing something with SJR 29. Is that one of the bills you're going to be looking at? Is SJR 29? What is the other one? You talked about two bills. Is there another number, or is there just a draft?
I think we just had one bill, didn't we, for the kicker reform?
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair, we did. In terms of kind of what was given a hearing, but there were other bills that need to be considered in the mix, and that maybe...
That's the question I was asking, if there's other bills we should be looking at.
Well, there were other bills in the mix. We decided early on to really focus on the bill that we put the most work in, which is a comprehensive approach.
Which is 29.
Because SJR 29. Yeah.
We're extremely interested in being involved with that conversation, so I wanted to make sure that we had enough preparation for that.
Good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a good bill then.
It was a good bill then. It's still a good bill. All right. Anybody else? Thank you very much, Paul. We will excuse you now so you can go do your duties in the House. And we now have the Department of Revenue teed up to speak. Do we have... we don't have our director here yet. Let's take a 10-minute break. We'll take a 10-minute break. recess here, and our next agenda item is to welcome the director of the Department of Revenue to describe some of their activities over there, most of which are on account of us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. Thank you very much for inviting me over. I have some updates, even though it's only been 2 months since you were here in full session. We launched into activity as soon as we knew we had a budget. So I wanted to update you on what we're doing on our strategic vision work in the department, how we're following up on many of the resources and legislative directives that we got from the session, and give you a little bit of an update on where we are on the amnesty. So on the vision, we started last fall looking at where we want to be when we grow up. Basically, I think we've been doing things using technology tools that were developed over 15 years ago, and we realized that they aren't going to serve us well going forward because people are used to using new kinds of technology that that weren't even around when our big systems were designed. So we set a vision for ourselves, a 5 to 7 year vision of transforming the organization into a model of 21st century tax administration, so that others who are looking around saying, well, what should we do to be an effective state tax administrator, people say, go look at what those people in Oregon are doing. A lot of our folks have asked us, why are we doing this now? Isn't there a better time? Well, there probably isn't ever a better time to think about redoing your business, but it's become really critical for us for several reasons. First, citizens expect us to interact with them very differently than we did in the past. We've pretty much been limited to telephone, in-person, and paper mail for an awful lot of our functions, and people interact with banks and retailers and everybody else with respect to financial transactions using the Internet, and they expect us to be able to do that too. So we need to really think about the efficiencies for us and efficiencies and effectiveness for taxpayers in enabling them to interact with us when they want to, how they want to, and to do as much of that interaction as they can for themselves, rather than having to tell us, well, I want this to happen, and then we just sort of make it happen. Business is changing. We need to be responsive to and aware of the effect of the changes in what's going on in the business community on taxpayer service and compliance, and the costs of compliance for taxpayers. You expect us to do things differently and anticipate compliance issues and address them, and so does the public, so that people are confident that their tax systems are being administered appropriately and equitably. We have business partners, as you know. Our one big group is local government, counties through the property tax system, but many others, stakeholders and business partners, who need us to think differently about how we work together so that we can find those points where we can leverage resource and be more effective and efficient in both sides of the relationships. And then our core automated systems are nearing the end of their useful life. They're not yet the Mir space station, but they're getting close. And so we know that, and it takes time to plan for, develop, test, and implement change, and we need to get started now. So the work we did last fall was, what do we want to look like? Where do we need to focus? And we set that goal for ourselves of being a 21st century tax administration model. We identified 7 pretty big areas of work that we know that we need to make change in order to achieve that. We need to have a very highly motivated, talented, and forward-looking workforce. We need to have a culture that strives for continuous improvement. We need to focus on delivering very high-quality business results and being able to talk objectively and from data about those business results. We need to be able to focus on the needs of our customers, taxpayers, who have to do business with us, and being able to offer them a tool so they can do business with us effectively, accurately, quickly, and cheaply from their perspective. We need to leverage the partnerships we have and create new ones. We need to support and enhance the public's confidence in their tax systems and their tax administrator. If people don't have confidence that we're doing what we should be doing the way we should be doing it, they have an excuse to say, well, why should I be doing what I'm supposed to be doing the way I'm supposed to be doing it? And then, and also a focus on compliance, the whole spectrum, voluntary compliance, cost of compliance for taxpayers, and our enforcement tools. So those are that sort of the big umbrella picture. Where we are now is, because this is not the kind of work that you do every day, we know that we need some expert help. And so we've just concluded a bidding process to get some assistance to do a review of our core systems to help us develop a business case and a policy option package for the 2011 legislative session to begin the process of developing replacements for our automated systems. We will be mapping our business processes and looking for opportunities to realign, refocus, coordinate, and become more efficient and effective in executing those processes. We are looking at the way that we measure our accomplishments. We have high-level key performance measures, but we also have a host of things that we measure internally to evaluate how we're doing, and we want to make sure that we're leveraging the data and information that we have to the maximum benefit. We also know that we are going to have to address the inevitable effects on our people of change in processes and systems and who they work with and the tools that they use. So we also have asked for some help with respect to that. And ultimately, the objective will be that we will be able to say, here's where we are, here's where we want to go, here's how we're going to get there, and here are the resources that we're going to need, the changes we have to make, the time it's going to take, and the return on the investments that we'll make. So that's where we are in that process. It gets me really excited going to work every day because we are beginning to see already changes that we're making from offering more people the opportunity to work remotely. In fact, is Deborah here? Yep, she's in the back. Deborah has a little house in Eastern Oregon that she loves dearly, and it's a long ways from here, and we have enabled her now to work from that little house periodically so she can get the kind of rest that she needs and not have to be driving back and forth across the state, and still is able to participate in meetings and do email and send things, compose things and monitor what you're doing and do it from Richland, Oregon. So that we're looking at that as a way to improve productivity and the energy that our employees can sustain about the work that we're doing. Having created a group that's focused on the change work that we need to do, really being able to focus on what is it that we need, what are we doing today, what do we need to be doing, and how are we going to get where we're going. So it's visible in the organization. People are getting very excited about it, asking a lot of questions like, how are we going to do this? And so we're taking that all piece by piece and communicating within the agency, and employees are getting excited, and we're getting excited. We're going to be using some techniques to look at efficiency in process. You may have heard of Lean, where DHS is using that to some degree of success for some of their processes, and so we're going to take a page from their book and look at our processing operation, for example, and see whether we can squeeze some extra steps and rework out of that. So it's very, very exciting and energizing for everybody in the agency. Any questions about the...
I think this is probably a good time for you to read what's on your lavalier there.
Oh. This is from almost a year ago. Department of Revenue is an agency that has done things in a particular way for a long time. And people, of course, get very comfortable with and very confident of the way they've done things if they've been trained and they know what they're doing. But every once in a while somebody says, why do we do this? And often the answer is, well, that's the way we've always done it. So one of my administrators came up with this little button that's DTWADI. Well, it's the way we've always done it with the little international no symbol through it. And so what this enables us to do, because we all use that answer. I mean, I did it last week. Just, why do we? Well, that's the, oh, my gosh, you know. And it allows us to question what we're doing, not be afraid of the answer, laugh about being human, and then boring in and saying, okay, well, what do we know about why we do it this way? And do we do something in a particular way because all returns used to be paper? Well, now 60% of them are electronic. The world's changed. Do we need to change the way we're doing things? So this is just one of our little tools for talking about change, making it less scary, I think, by being able to sort of laugh at ourselves every once in a while when we discover that even people who work in the revenue department are human. So
I thought it said no tightwads.
That's the way we've always done it.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Madam Chair, I have a question regarding the new Department of Revenue. Will you be meeting with those of us that actually help taxpayers prepare? Because, you know, issues have come up. I'll tell you, since I've been home after session, I've had more phone calls from other CPAs. Why are we doing? Why is the Department of Revenue doing this, et cetera? And in fact, an issue came up last week that Chris helped me out with a constituent. Actually, it was an immediate response, but I think it was coincidental. But I look like I walk on water to this constituent right now. But, you know, so I would hope you look at, you know, those of us that struggle with the department because of its procedures,
yeah,
that have ideas and at least hear what some of those struggles are.
And that's a piece of that partnership aspect of the vision work. The some of the concepts that underlie that, enhancing and taking advantage of partnerships, both traditional and new, is changing the expectations we have in the organization about when we reach out to practitioners and to people who really do know what it's like to be in community and trying to respond to things that we're doing or requirements that we have, and identify the places that are where it doesn't work, see what we can improve, and then if it's something that we need to ask the legislature to address, then putting together a range of solutions. So let me just give you an example. In our administrative rulemaking process, we're talking about, before we start to write a rule to solve a problem, engaging the professionals in looking at the problem and making sure we're seeing all of it. Because sometimes we see, you know, from our perspective, but not necessarily, unless we have people who have come to work for us who very recently were preparing returns and advising taxpayers in the private sector, we may not see it through that lens at all because it's not in our experience. So we need to reach out and ask, we see this problem. Is this the whole problem? Mm-hmm. And then we see these as some solutions, but we may not see all of them. What are some solutions that you see? So that'll be one area where I think you'll see some change. We currently do have liaison meetings with the people who are tax lawyers. We have a CPA liaison group, and we also have the licensed tax consultant, tax preparer liaison group. But oftentimes those people self-select who's going to come to those update meetings, and it's not always from communities around the state. So that's one of the admonitions now and expectations is that we're really out there looking for people who can help reflect for us, hold up that mirror, and show us how it looks to them what we're doing. So if you, Senator, if you have names of people that you think might be interested in providing that kind of input to us, we'd be grateful to have it. Because sometimes what we do is we contact the licensing board staff and say who might be willing, and it sometimes ends up being a fairly limited pool that they even know to go to. But that would help us tremendously. I'd appreciate it. Any other questions
before we do the next section here?
Okay. So I would like to be able, whenever I come back to do an update, to just give you a snapshot of where we are and what we're doing in that work, because tax administration, a lot of it doesn't require statute change. You've given us a lot of responsibility and flexibility to carry things out, but just as Senator Telfer has said, sometimes you get the feedback about the way we've chosen to do things, and it just would help us tremendously to be connected directly to folks that have those concerns. The next thing I want to talk to you about is sort of where we are and some of the things that came up as we developed and shared the compliance report. I know January is a long ways away, but you remember I came and shared with you the results of a study that we did as a result of legislation that was passed in the 2008 legislative session. And we came forward with three different kinds of recommendations, some things that we recognized that we could do simply by making some administrative change, things that we needed your help with a statutory change, and then things that we needed some additional resource in order to do. So I wanted to report on sort of what's going on with those. We started a six-month pilot with a private collection firm. We used several private collection agencies to help expand our reach, particularly for people who are outside of Oregon who owe the state money. But we want to explore whether there's a better way to structure their compensation and processes in order for them to be more effective collecting debt for the state. We also started contacting taxpayers outside the 8 to 5 time block and had some folks volunteer to flex their schedules a couple of nights a week in the early evening and to do contact work when folks are home. We've started to talk to both the Board of Accountancy and the Board of Tax Practitioners to figure out how best to share the additional information that you've permitted us to share with them when there's an issue about the appropriateness or competence of tax preparation services. And so we're working through making sure that as we share information, we're preserving taxpayer confidentiality while they're trying, of course, to maximize their ability to perform their consumer protection function. We've also been given the authority to share information more broadly under certain kinds of circumstances that may involve unlawful activity, and so we're making sure, again, that the way in which we manage that disclosure is only the amount of information that's needed, appropriately safeguarded, so that we're doing only what we need to do to the extent that we need to do it. We had there was House Bill 3082, which gives us the ability to conduct a pilot with up to three licensing boards to look to see whether making tax compliance a condition of a license renewal, whether that would be an effective tax compliance tool. So the bill doesn't become law effective, enforceable, until the end of September, but we're already looking to see if we can find some partner licensing boards and then talk to them about just the logistics of when they do their relicensure, how they interact with their licensees, planning for educating both the boards and the licensees about the process, and then how we would run those tax compliance checks so that for those licensees who are in compliance, it's a seamless, invisible process. And also, again, what's the appropriate information to share with the licensing board if there is a compliance problem.
Elizabeth, are you finding interest as you talk informally to licensing boards?
Well, I've talked to two folks who said they thought their boards would be interested. What we're trying to do, of course, is for our three, see if we can find some diversity. Not, just three little boards or three big boards, but a little and a middle and a larger. We want to focus on personal income tax and not have it be sort of complicated by, corporate or, some other overlay of tax liability, and make sure that we're optimizing our ability to communicate with people as well as to not have any risk that as we look for evidence of compliance that we might miss it simply because they're using an assumed business name or they've got a limited liability entity or something else. So we're trying to think through carefully what are the criteria that would help us best evaluate the usefulness of the tool and not get all wrapped around the axle with difficult implementation. So I've talked to a couple people and they've said, our boards meet in the fall and we think they might be interested and we'll, take it further and ask. The boards will have to agree and probably they will need to adopt rules that make renewal of the license contingent on tax compliance. So we also have to have policy boards and stakeholder groups basically agreeing that it's something that should be piloted and then report back.
And then have you consulted with the Secretary of State did an audit where they had some pretty extraordinary information. Have you coordinated with them as you go along your, I mean, have you gotten back to them to find out in more detail what they found and maybe help that guide you where you ought to be looking?
Absolutely, Senator Burdick. The Secretary of State actually did that audit as a piece of a 3 or 4 part a set of work that they're doing with us. We were looking for, had been talking about and had identified in the compliance report the potential because other states are using this kind of a tool. And so they were interested in testing the concept also. And so that's why you got the report that you did, that preliminary findings that you did. They've given us all the results from that evaluation and some suggestions, and they've moved on to a couple of other projects that they're working on in connection with tax compliance. So I think by 6 or 8 months from now, there will be a report coming from the Secretary of State that will address collection issues, the licensing issues, and a couple of other things where we've asked them to sort of help extend the resource to look at the way we do our business. Okay. So we'll be definitely back with more of that. But that was a very, very helpful review that they did for us. And I've talked to Gary Blackmer, the new director of audits, and said, can we keep the team for a little while? Because they're really doing a great job, and it's helping us a lot. So far, at least, he's willing to let us keep the team and have them continue to work with us.
Good. I was pretty impressed by their work.
They're extremely thoughtful, and what's wonderful is they aren't limited by the way we do things. So they can ask a very different kind of question, look at things differently. They are learning about how we run our business, but they bring that objectivity that just helps tremendously when you're trying to ask questions about whether you do things the way you should. Let's see here. And then House Bill 2815, which was the Interagency Compliance Network, this was Representative Holvey's bill that set up a statutory strengthening of relationship between 7 state agencies that work with issues related to tax and in the employment arena. And we've had a formation meeting. We've got a draft memorandum of agreement that we'll be talking about when we meet next week. And we've begun doing strategic planning. There's $750,000 that has been assigned to the emergency board that we need to come forward with a plan, and they'll be able to release the funds to help get that project going. So we're very excited about that work, and we'll be reporting to, I believe the first emergency board meeting is June, so we'll be aimed at that June meeting. On the budget resource side, we were given two policy option packages, one related to collections of income tax, and then the other related to collection of debts that are owed to other state agencies that we collect on their behalf. It pretty much new positions. And we've gotten a group pulled together already to focus on business and payroll tax issues, and another group that's focusing on. We've got a range of different types of accounts, and our folks who work inside the Salem building tend to do things where they can do telephone collections and interact with taxpayers pretty much on the phone. And then in the field, we've got folks who get out and really work with businesses that have tax problems. But there's a bunch of cases that are a little more complicated than just telephone work, but not quite what needs to be sent to the field. So we've hired a group of folks to fill in that midpoint of those more complex accounts, and they've started. And we've got some folks working specifically now on employer-related taxes and filing enforcement. And then the other agency accounts package is funded for us to bring in the new, basically a new unit to do this work in addition to the other folks we have already, starting November 1. And then our goal is related to revenue generation for 18 months. Then there's some of the other issues that we had identified and we're working on includes looking across our programs to explore whether we need to have more attention focused on criminal investigations, and we'll be working with the Compliance Network on those kinds of issues. If we need anything in the way of legislation, we'll be coming back in 2011. We are working on a business case related to data matching with financial institutions. This was something that was considered in committee as a bill, and I think we concluded that we just needed to learn more about it. So we ended up just putting in a budget note and pursuing some more information, and we'll be bringing that back. We were very, very fortunate to get seven interns from Willamette, from the Graduate School of Management, to come over and help us with some of these real special projects. And it's been absolutely delightful to have these just incredibly energized young people coming in and poking and prodding at us and asking us these kinds of questions and doing research and coming in and saying, well, have you thought about this and have you thought about that, and we could do this and look at that, and just getting really revved up. And we actually have a couple of them who've said they had never thought about public service as a career, but now that they've worked with us for the summer, they want to do that, which is fabulous. So we'll be able to report back on the data match. We've got also in the collections policy option package some funds to install an automated telephone call distributor that will allow us to be more responsive to incoming calls, and we're getting ready to install that. We also had some dollars in that policy option package to provide more tools to taxpayers to self-serve on our website and manage their accounts, which I mentioned is something we really need to be doing more, is letting people do things for themselves using the internet, and then continuing work on the licensing pilot. So those are sort of some of the big areas that were raised in the compliance report. And are there any questions on that? If not, I'll move into amnesty. We actually started seriously working on amnesty planning in May, when it started to look like the legislature could very likely go ahead with the legislation. So we had a group that started planning and working and figuring things out in May. As you know, the bill sets up the amnesty period from October 1 to November 19. Taxpayers will file an application. They can provide a return or an amended return with that application, or follow it up as late as mid-January. The incentive is a waiver of penalties and half of the interest that would otherwise be due. And we have been working feverishly on policy issues, forms and instructions, the website. And I will tell you, the website, at least the front page, is up. And I've given you the address here. Right now, what people can see is an explanation of what amnesty is, when it will be, what taxes are covered, what the benefits are, who will qualify, and there's a set of frequently asked questions that they can link to. And we've already got contact information and a special post office box set up. So that's all out there, and we'll be continuing to add additional tools for people to use: the application form, other tax forms, a calculator for the interest, so that they can even figure out, here's what I owe, here's what my interest would be at the reduced rate. So if they want to send a check with their application in return, they're able to do that. And we're placing media buys. We did contract for some help on the media, and we've got television and newspaper media that's supposed to begin right after Labor Day. Also are going to be using, in addition to the television and the print media, something I learned today. I had no idea what this meant: internet search engine optimization, which means when you do a Yahoo or a Google or some sort of search on Oregon amnesty, our site pops up first on the list instead of on page 10. So that apparently there's something that you can do so that that's what happens, and we're doing that internet magic. We're also going to be using direct mail. We've got lots of leads, and we will be contacting people that we think might be interested in taking advantage of the amnesty, and also tax professional organizations, letting accountants know, letting business organizations know, anybody that that we can, that our amnesty is going to start. One of the nice things about the relationships we have with other states is, as states have run amnesty programs, people send out an email and ask, would you please put a link to our site on your website so that in case somebody has moved from our state to yours, they know that there's an amnesty running, and so we'll be able to do that as well. We've done that for a number of states over the last several years. And in addition to just making sure that folks have the opportunity to take advantage of it and that we process whatever it is that they send us, we're going to try and learn from those folks who do take advantage of the amnesty whatever we can about folks that might not have, so that we can improve our compliance strategies going forward. And we'll keep you updated. I imagine you have at least one more meeting between now and the first of the year, so we'll come back and say, well, here's where we are now, and it might be we're in the middle of it.
We have a meeting the day before the amnesty starts.
Oh, end of September?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I imagine we're going to have lots of people just kind of revved up and raring to go. But we are required, again, budget note, to make a full report in February when you're back in session. So we will be doing that. And that's what I have.
Great.
Are there any questions about
now,
that?
On the amnesty, we had a projected revenue target of, I think, $16
million. Mm-hmm.
As you've looked into it more, does that still seem to be the most accurate target that we can come up with?
Well, Senator Burdick, we don't have any basis for saying different. What we're going to do is try to optimize what comes in. And my hope is that we will meet or exceed that number, but we haven't done any independent evaluation, and the preparation we've done so far isn't looking at sort of what that forecast is. So we'll be sharing information with your staff and looking at what comes in, and we'll know a lot more towards the end of November.
Oh yes, we after it runs. Will. For better or for worse. Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Morris.
Thank you. I noticed you made a comment, Elizabeth, that you're calling people at home in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this age of fraud and identity theft, mm-hmm. how do you cross that barrier when you initiate the call? I'm from the Department of Revenue.
We're subject to some of the same kinds of practices that anyone who's collecting an obligation has to go through, and so we ask for the person that we're calling for, and then if they're not available, we might ask, is there a time when we can call back that would be more convenient? But we don't say it's about a tax debt. We just we're very, very general about the information that we leave. Whether if we leave a message or try to ascertain when the person might be available. So unless we're pretty sure through some request for additional information from them, once, if I were to call you and say, this is Elizabeth from the Department of Revenue, am I talking with Mr. Morse? And you say yes, and I might say, can you give me the last four digits of your social so I can make sure that I am talking to the Mr. Morse I think I'm supposed to be talking to? So we do try to make sure that we're speaking to the person we're trying to contact, and then not talk about anything related to tax, confidential tax information, until we're sure of that.
Do you get pushback?
Mm. I think his question was
from the person receiving the call saying,
I'm sure some people do, do say that, and in which case I know our folks have training on what to do, whether it's Do you want to check our website and call our general number and ask for me, or, you know, some way that that person would be reassured that they were in fact talking to who we say we are? Oftentimes when we're talking to someone on the phone, we've already sent them something by mail, and we can refer to an item that they should have received in the mail with the date and a reference number and, you know, other things that would indicate that we are who we say we are. And some people are cautious and some people aren't. So we just, you know, we work with them wherever they are in terms of their comfort.
Those of us who pay our bills have a very quiet life.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, that's a very good rundown. Let us know if we can help out on any of this, especially the amnesty program, if you need any assistance.
Oh, yeah, I did think of something, Madam Chair.
Okay,
that
go ahead.
You just prompted it, which is that is there some sort of template or something that we could include in newsletters that we might be sending out that would publicize this too?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, certainly if you can include the link to the website
mm-hmm.
anywhere and everywhere would be wonderful. And as you look at the website, there may be something that we've tried to make it, you know, very clear and easy to understand. If you want to lift any portion of that out and include that with a link to the website, that would be super.
Thank you for that question. That's actually an excellent idea. We should all be doing that. We should probably take that to our caucuses as well.
And if you think there would be some value in us going through legislative revenue or, you know, legislative admin to just get information out to all members when things get rolling in another week or so, we can send an email over and ask that it, I'm assuming there are lists of, you know, there's a listserv for the senators and a listserv for the House members, and we can send that over through leadership or wherever the right place is and say, you know, the website's up, we're starting the publicity. If you have constituents who are interested, here's some information.
Mm-hmm.
We can certainly do that. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, we're done early, everybody. Any information or comments or jokes or good of the order? Any comments on Chris's beard?
Comments on what?
Chris's beard. You
Chris's
didn't
beard? I was wondering if that had some significance.
It was a gray. It was distinguished.
There was no gray when I started this job.
All right. Well, thank you, committee, and we'll see you on September 30th. We are adjourned.